Georgia, you are a rare creative creature. You're a singer, drummer, producer, songwriter, and a Mercury-nominated solo artist. Welcome to the Creative Blood Experience.
Wow, what an intro. I love that. Thank you.
Well, look, we're actually sitting in your studio, at the bottom of your garden, drinking your coffee. So thank you for the warm welcome into your natural habitat.
Pleasure.
We're surrounded by the most phenomenal amount of studio gear. I'd love you to paint a picture for those listening of what we're looking at, because this is your domain.
Yes, of course, there is quite a lot going on. So we have, there's like a whole rack of synthesizers.
Yep.
I'm big into me outboard gear.
Yep.
And then right here is my ARP. This is the pride and joy of the studio. It's a 2600 for those that know. And then I've actually got guitars and basses and
some drum pads.
Drum pads, the Simmons. Yeah.
Amazing.
I'm really into like mixing analog with digital. That's my thing. It's not the cheapest way of doing things, but it's, you know, part of the reason why I love being in this line of work is because...
Can play.
Yeah, well, it's always been a bit of a wacky, wild adventure. You know, like synthesis was made by weird characters in labs. So I like carrying on that tradition.
It's all like mad scientist
yeah,
vibes.
Yeah.
I think that's a huge advantage for any artist, because you're able to take an element of control to you, but more because I've genuinely
loved it. It's really bizarre. Half of the job in a studio is problem solving.
Yeah.
Knowing how to problem solve means that you have to know about the behind the scenes of the technology. And it has really served me well of like when I've gone to America, say, for instance, certain studios in LA, where, you know, it's a big deal. These are like, you know, engineers who have worked with Pharrell and all the big, big players.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm able to walk in and understand, okay, they're using an SSL desk from wherever. Okay, this is cool. I know how the chains work. I know what they did. So essentially, I could actually be an engineer for any of those people. It's just something that I love.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's a real area that still needs to be pushed, because, you know, everyone wants to be the artist, but that's getting more and more saturated.
Yeah.
And there are loads of other ways that you can have an absolutely fantastic career in music.
Yeah.
And that's one of the ways, because we're really lacking in women in that area.
The engineering space.
Yeah. And also the producer space. A lot of artists want to work with women now,
that's
you know.
Right.
And so I feel like we're at a real pivotal moment now, I think.
So it's your moment. It's your moment.
Wow, it could be.
I'm going to name one female producer. You name another. Linda Perry.
Wonder Girl.
Belinda Carlisle.
Marta Saglioni, I think it is.
Okay. Roisin Murphy.
Is she
Moloko? Is that Moloko?
I don't know if she is a producer.
Isn't she a producer? Imogen Heap.
Oh, yeah.
Imogen Heap.
Yeah, of course.
She was also very much the forefront.
Yeah, definitely.
Especially very, very, very early on with YouTube. Every evening, she'd go down to the studio, she switched the camera on, and then she would release these clips as part of the process.
Mm.
So she would basically have that creative control of what she was sharing, but she was still very much focused on taking the audience on a journey. Sean Combs did it after that.
Ah.
And she was very early into like socials and technology, you know, sort of that tech
She's
side of things.
She's always been a complete pioneer, hasn't she?
With tech
and, you know, using it to actually the artist's advantage rather than, you know, it being a ploy of marketing. Being like,
she's living and breathing it, 1,000,000%. Because as actually another guest on the podcast said, you know, creativity is messy.
Yeah.
And you don't
100%.
Always want people to see you in a messy space. It's like, it's not necessarily the way that you want to be presented.
Yeah. I think it's having that confidence, which I think takes time.
But you can be sharing a process or even giving an insight into like your direction.
Yeah.
And actually, that's way more interesting to people than just a, you know, a polished end product.
Yeah, definitely. It's really interesting. So much of our discussions, if you like, around the boardroom and the tables with the labels is like, how do you get your artistry across through socials? Like, how do you want people to see you in your socials?
Yeah, or
how do you want people to, you know, they're not seeing enough of what you do behind in the studio. They're not seeing who you are as an artist and blah, 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 and all this and that. And I just come from an era where part of the mystery was...
That's the magic.
That was the thing that made me buy the music.
Yeah.
I'm very honest that I just don't think I'm from that era of social media. You know, I remember what it was like without it.
Yeah.
We've all had to adapt. And, you know, I think every artist on every single level has found it frustrating.
Yeah.
And also really liberating because you're your own marketer. And,
yeah.
You know, that's liberating. You don't have to rely on somebody else telling your story. But we're at a time where it's so unpredictable.
Well, it's up to you individually how you want to be seen and heard.
Exactly.
And so that's sort
exactly.
of, it's that weird excitement of like, do I show this?
Yeah. Or is
this?
People are saying to me, I want you to show more of what happens in the studio, but do I want to? And then you're going, actually, no, this is ridiculous. I want to inspire the younger generations and da-da-da. But the magic in this room sometimes can't be captured. You know, so it's
totally.
It's kind of an interesting period.
And then weirdly, better or for worse, people want to see you messy. That's sort of the bit they want to see you when you just rolled out of bed. It's sort of, in fact, you did an Instagram.
Oh, did
from
I?
From bed.
Oh, yeah.
You did a post,
recently.
Didn't you? Yeah, you did. I think it was a story.
Like,
and that was in your bedroom, for God's
so
sake. Not even
I,
your studio. Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
criticised that I'm not from that era. Maybe, hang on a minute.
We got to get on the show,
yeah.
Pick some cards. So here's a reminder for you and everybody listening how the show works. In my hand, I have a deck of 50 cards. Each card contains one question designed to reveal how you have navigated your creative experience so far and in turn share insights that our listeners can take into their own creative lives. This show is all about passing it on. So in a minute, I'm going to ask you to select 10 of these cards at random. Do you have any questions for me so far?
No.
Excellent. Before you pick your cards, I'm going to very thoroughly shuffle them. Whilst I do, I'm going to introduce you and your world, actually, to our listeners. Georgia, you're based here in North West London.
In North Wheezy.
Where you grew up in a creative household with your mother, a social worker, younger brother Sid, a choreographer, and your father, Neil Barnes, whose career as one half of the iconic band Left Field saw you grow up immersed in the world of dance music, festival performances, and live tours. With your bedroom doubling up as Left Field's studio, at age 6, you were challenged by a Left Field bandmate to copy a drum pattern, and you did, perfectly, first time. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. How did
you're like
we
Narwhal.
Get this intel? That may have been the birth of Georgia the drummer, but perhaps even more formatively, shortly after you were gifted your first four-track recorder, and you spent your childhood getting to grips with the intricacies of music production, choosing to experiment with sampling and synths instead of playing out with friends. Sad face here, but actually not sad at all. Fabulous. Already a self-confessed studio nerd, you went to the Brit School of Performing Arts.
Dum, dum, dum.
Yes. That's where you studied pop music and became a key part of the South London club and music scene, alongside the likes of Jessie Ware and Sampha. Familiar names to you?
Familiar.
Okay, good. Then came, get ready for this one, a BA in N... Hold on. That's not true.
That's been my whole life.
I'm
Go
sure.
on, try and say it.
I can say
it's
it.
Good.
Ethnomusicology.
Oh.
Can you, round of applause, thank you. Can you tell me what that is, please?
It's like anthropology, so it's like the study of how music has helped civilizations, or like what is the sort of use of music in a society or a little, you know, a little kind of town or village or...
Wow.
I went to SOAS, so we didn't study Western stuff. We studied outer West, so Africa, Asia, South Americas, yeah.
And then You start working as a touring drummer for friends such as Quez, Kay Tempest and Mikachu.
Yeah.
Through it all, you were making your own music in your bedroom studio.
Yeah.
Inspired by everything from grime to 80s disco. Wicked combo. And then in 2015, you signed your first record deal with Domino.
Yeah.
And released your debut album, the self-titled Georgia, which was entirely self-produced on a laptop. Your second album, Seeking Thrills, garnered a ton of critical acclaim, including that Mercury nomination, which in turn opened the door to a flood of collaborations and remixes ranging from Ollie Alexander, Muramasa, Gorillaz and Shy Girl, right through to songwriting with and the legend that is Shania Twain. I need to ask, what was that like?
It was amazing. It was actually a pinch yourself sort of moment.
It had to be.
Yeah, I was in the studio with her for, I think it was 3 days, yeah. Yeah, that was amazing. You leave the studio and you're like, just wrote a song with Shania Twain.
Yeah.
And it's all very surreal. And then when I entered the room with Shania, I was thinking, the first thing I'm going to do is offer to make a cup of tea.
Amazing. How does Shania Twain take her tea? So I'm thinking like peppermint, chamomile.
No, I think it was just straight up builders.
Was it really?
Yeah. But you don't really know whether it's going to make the record or not, because that's the whole thing about writing sessions. But the idea is you take a gamble and you do it, and who knows? So I had that sort of mentality. I was like, well, that was fun. It would be extra special if it made the record, you know? And then 6 months down the line, I get a call.
What was the name of the song? Because I don't actually
have You Got
It
Good.
Okay.
Yeah. You Got It Good.
Okay. Your most recent album, Euphoric, saw you move to LA for the summer to collaborate with Vampire Weekend alum Rostam. And as we record, you are currently on tour with Kim Petras and in the middle of writing your next album. I'm very grateful for you to make the time. I know I've said this a few times. I could sit here and talk to you for days, but I know we need to crack on with the cards.
Oh no, we need to get to the bloody cards.
Bloody cards. You said it. Pick 10, if you wouldn't mind putting them on the desk.
4, 5, 6.
Just to give you a heads up, the deck does contain a wild card, which contains a slightly punchier question, and a dealer's choice, which is a question that we've created especially for you. You can pass on one question and one question only. So you've chosen the cards.
Chosen the cards.
Yeah, well done. Okay.
Has anyone passed?
Yeah, they have.
Really?
Yeah. A little bit too close to the bone. I'm going in deep.
Oh gosh.
Georgia, question number one. What's an industry myth that you'd love to crush?
God. Well, I think an industry myth is this sort of overnight success.
Here we go.
I think that is a myth. I'm sorry, I really do. And, you know, you only have to sort of look at your Michael Jacksons and you see actually how long it takes to get to a Thriller point, or you know, you see a Taylor Swift's, you know, she's been working since she was 16, you know, it's a long time. I mean, I do think that perhaps TikTok, the evolution of social media has sort of encouraged this myth, because also I have conversations with kids who DM me on Instagram and they're just like, how do I do this? And I'm like, time, you know, it's like
patience.
So patience now is quite an interesting idea, because for young artists on TikTok and stuff, that's just not the mentality.
Yeah.
The mentality is the opposite of patience, because the modern A&R's idea of music now is to churn it out as fast as possible, right? And I think viral videos have had an impact on that, because I think kids, as soon as something isn't viral, they see that as a sort
a flop.
And actually, it's not, because out of the flops, out of the crappy songs, crappy demos, the crappy days in the studio,
that's the process.
That is actually the thing that makes you improve. Pink Pantheress is very honest about that, that her first viral hit, that was like her 10th try. You know, it's a myth, this overnight success.
How do you decide what to say yes and no to professionally?
I think that's a very, very, very interesting question. I mean, my management and anyone who's worked with me closely will know that I just say yes to everything.
Oh, really?
From the get-go, I've always just said yes. You know, I really have, because that's it. My appetite has been very, very hungry. I wouldn't say yes to certain things, you know, definitely. Like, I'm not an idiot, you know. Yeah. Sometimes you are strategic.
And do you normally make that choice based on the person or the thing itself? Or is it sort of a combo?
I mean, if it's producing work, at the moment, I find it hard to produce new and up-and-coming artists.
Yeah.
Just because I feel like I haven't yet got the wealth of knowledge of how to pass the right sort of knowledge on yet. Although my manager tells me quite often that I could probably now get in the studio with new up-and-coming artists and see where to take. I just always thought that's such a big responsibility. I've mainly been producing artists that have had quite a substantial time in the industry. Like working with Ollie Alexander, you know, whose band years and years.
Yeah.
But he's now breaking out as a solo artist.
He's our new Eurovision entry.
Yeah. Ollie's been in the industry for a long time now, and I produced a couple of songs off his third record. I felt kind of a bit more like I can learn off him as well.
I think also, I don't know, I get a sense from what you're saying that part of deciding to say what yes and no to is very much about an exchange.
Yeah.
Because we all sort of have to feel like we're being fed as much as we're feeding, if that makes sense.
100%.
And that feels like a natural collaboration.
Do you know what? You should have him on the podcast as the next guest.
What's your secret to staying creatively resilient?
Oh, yes. What's my secret? I've been in situations, particularly big writing situations, where you're like in a writing camp or something, and I have felt very overwhelmed and slightly, I don't know if I belong here.
Yeah, you know, insecure.
There are certain camps I've been in, like the Gorillaz camp. Damon very much still embodies that. When you go into the studio with Damon, you want to impress Damon.
Yes. Yeah.
And you want, well, not just impress Damon, you want to impress.
Yeah, you want to have a point of view.
You bring your thing to that song. That's what he wants. And so it's like that ups the get, because you're like, wow, he's had so-and-so on the songs. They've had this, da, da, da. So when you go into a session, that's very much your mindset. And the resilience comes from somewhere, you know. And I know it's knowledge, because
knowledge, so doing the work.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing that I would say about me is that from a very early age, I listened to music like in a way that was sort of probably a bit unhealthy. You know, I'd be fascinated by listening to, say, a Missy Elliott song, and like, where's that beat come from? Okay. Oh, yeah, I'm going to look at the back notes for that. Oh, it's come from Timbaland. Who's Timbaland? Okay, I'm going to look through that. You know, it was like from a very early age, I wanted to know everything about each bit of music that I listened to.
Yep.
And one thing I'm very good at is sitting in a studio, and if somebody goes, plays an idea, I'll be like, oh, that sounds like so-and-so. And then, so a way for me to kind of communicate with that person would be, do you listen to this then? And do you listen to that? And they'll be like, yeah, how do you know that? Blah, 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 blah. How do you? And then that kind of knowledge, that knowledge, then it affirms my position to be there. Yep. And therefore my resilience is kind of, it feels quite strong, you know? Also, I remember this moment being in the studio with Damon, like him playing me an idea of a certain song, whether it was going to be for a Gorillaz track, I can't remember. And he sort of referenced something, and I went, oh, that's from so-and-so. So he went, what? How do you know that? And I was like, oh, you know, I know.
Yeah, yeah. What's your top tip for getting your work seen or heard?
Oh.
It's a big one, I know.
Yeah. I think now, maybe you have to be open more so to the idea of not just one linear road with your creativity. Like, I started out with an idea that I just wanted to be this one thing.
What was that one thing?
I just wanted to be this, like, artist. You know, if I think back to a kid, you know, there was this idea of a pop star. And I think over the years, I've had to sort of let that go a little bit and go, actually, I've got so much to offer in all these different areas that I can explore. I can go down sound design. I can go down the road of engineering. I can go down the road of collaborating with, you know, visual artists, with collaborating with my brother, who's a dancer. Like, I'll very often just do some music for him. You know, there's like loads of all these different worlds that I can tap into. But it took me a while to kind of let go of the idea of, I just want to be this one thing. You know, and also that one thing that you often, you know, nobody really ends up there. There's a lot of musicians now that I know that have been extremely successful that have done degrees in psychology and psychotherapy and now really helping other artists with their mental health, yep. You know. So I don't know, I think you're very often thrown this kind of image of what it should look like, your life, your where we all need to head. And actually very often it's all the little other paths, yep, that are most fulfilling.
Right, this is called the quickfire round. Please finish these sentences in as few words as possible. My process is...
My process is chaotic but controlled.
Ay vey. Okay, when I'm stuck, I...
I stop and get some fresh air.
A project is done when...
When I feel like I've given all I can give for that one thing.
And one thing I'll never make is...
One More Time by Daft Punk.
Because it's such a banger.
It's a one and done. One of the greatest dance songs of all time.
Okay, high five to that. Well done. That was the calmest response. Something just changed in the room where you just took that in your stride. I get weirdly anxious about that question because I'm excited that that pressure yields some weird responses.
I was very calm then, wasn't I? But I sort of...
What happened?
I don't know. You know, I've been thrown into such uncomfortable situations.
Like deep waters. Yeah, yeah,
that I've learned how to just suddenly...
Zone in. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's taken time.
Yeah. Okay, right. Next question. How do you stay motivated and inspired when you hit a creative block or rut?
I think that's a really important question, isn't it? I mean, I have various ways. I mean, I know that if I'm in a creative rut, very often don't try and push trying to be creative in that point, because I know that for me, it means that at that moment in time, I'm feeling in a rut in my day-to-day life. You know, I'm feeling like just generally a bit crap.
Yeah.
You know, so I look at it, well, in that instance, I have to look at like myself, you know, I have to try and give myself a bit of TLC.
Yeah.
And I know that I'm no good to anyone feeling like crap in a studio. Sometimes, you know, if I pick up a guitar and I'll start to just sing feeling upset or whatever. But sometimes I'm in such a creative rut that picking up a guitar seems like a chore in itself.
Yeah.
So I've learned more and more to sit with my emotions. I used to deal with it by going to the pub and going on a 3-day bender.
Yeah.
You know, I'll be honest with you, that's
very
what
British.
I used to do. And that's not what I do anymore.
Yeah.
So I'll sit with myself, not put too much pressure on myself, And then the motivation will just start to come. I often find, like, unfortunately, it takes about a week.
Yeah.
And after that week, I'll feel a bit sort of irritated with everything. Like, I can't, something's wrong. And then I'll come in here and suddenly the motivation's back. But I think actually some of the motivation comes from, you know, most of my mates work 9 to 5 and you suddenly go, oh, you're such a wuss. And sometimes viewing it as a 9 to 5, I feel like helps. Mm. You know, it's like, okay, I know I'm not going to create anything mind blowing, but just to get on my clothes, come down here,
yeah,
and just get on with it.
I think sometimes routine is really underrated with yeah. creativity.
Yeah. I think being like dramatic about it and going, oh, that's it.
Yeah, yeah. Close the door, never come back.
I'm never going to create again.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm very realistic about these things that, you know, a lot of the greatest artists of all time that I consider greats, you know, Joni Mitchell's, the, you know, they're all very honest about writer's block.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally.
It's
yeah,
not
yeah.
an unusual occurrence. It happens. Also, the creative ruts. So sometimes your mind, your body, your soul, it's getting ready to write something that means more emotionally than ever before.
Who's your dream collaborator?
Kate Bush.
Legend. Significant relation to the cover you did of Running Up That Hill.
Which, might I add,
yes,
did do before Stranger Things.
Okay. Okay.
Just putting it
Side
out
note.
There.
Yeah, yeah.
No, no. But, the significance of Kate's music has just been beyond, really, in my whole sort of development as a human being, really. My dad and my mum were huge, huge fans. My dad, I think he actually tried to reach out to Kate to get her on a Left Field track. Hounds of Love was played to me and my brother from 5 or 6, you know, so her music was just drilled into us. My dad would often tell me stories about Kate in the studio and how you know, important she is and a pioneer in recording music and writing music. So I just wanted to cover a song that just meant a lot to me and my family. And so I decided to do Running Up That Hill. And actually, my brother and my mum are the backing singers on that song.
No
yeah,
way.
Yeah, because I got them in here, actually.
Of course you did.
and my brother is the dancer in the video. And my brother, who's a professional dancer, is a dancer because of Kate Bush as well.
Wow.
We are huge super fans.
Yeah.
We are actually. Through my journey, people always ask me, who are your favourite artists? And it's always been Kate Bush and Missy Elliott.
Yeah.
They were like the ones for me that yeah. just, I think they're two very similar artists in that.
Do you?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Because I think Missy, you know, and Kate Bush, They broke the rules within genres that were very formulated.
Yeah.
You know, pop music essentially is a formula,
yeah.
you know, and hip hop as well.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that caliber of artists came and they sort of disrupted and they went, well, hang in a minute, within 3 minutes, you can do some of the most extraordinary kind of things with sound and words and, you know, visuals, and they really push the boundaries. And
yep.
I think if it weren't for them, I don't think we'd have a lot of the artists that we consider now
yep.
as real groundbreaking artists.
Yeah.
They kind of paved the way, really. And not only for females in music or whatever, in like, I always remember Big Boy from Outkast being asked who his favourite artist was, and he was just like, Kate Bush. And my dad, coming from like such a sort of underground, like male dance world, 90s, like beats, techno, da da da. When you ask them who their favourite artist was, Kate Bush. John Lydon from the Sex Pistols. Who's his favourite artist? If you ask him, Kate Bush. It's like, that's the impact. So I always loved that.
You picked a wild card, Georgia. What's a personal project that you've not told anybody about yet? Sorry. God. Not sorry.
Yeah. A personal project. You know, there's... Oh, this is... Yeah. I was a big folk fan from a young age as well. So I went through my kind of English folk stage at about 16. It was just when I started the Brit School, which was... going there to study pop music, but you're actually listening to like Pentangle. So I've always been obsessed with the 60s, 70s English folk rock scene.
Yep.
You know, I went through my Nick Drake stage and all of that. And I bought a guitar that looked like Nick Drake's guitar. And so I've got quite a lot of folk record, like my idea of what folk music is. And I have still been doing like... you know, kind of just me and acoustic guitar, but I have not played it to anyone and might not ever play it to anyone. But I love it. And maybe one day I shall release a folk album. Yeah, so I doesn't seem that odd for me really to make an album of just me and banjo, but
no,
I'm sure to people who are fans, they would be like, yeah. I mean, considering I'm supporting Kim Petras, it would be slightly unusual for me to suddenly come out with just a banjo and myself. Maybe that would be good, actually. Well, maybe she would appreciate that.
Yeah.
Maybe just with a four on the floor underneath, just like, and just like,
amazing. Bring it back.
EDM banjo.
Yeah. Weirdly, your response takes me to the next question.
Oh, good.
Do you believe that creativity involves putting your heart and soul into your work, or do you view it as more of a free-flowing process with surprising outcomes?
I think a bit of both. Am I allowed to say a bit of both?
Totally.
Yeah,
yes.
I think 9 times out of 10, it probably is the free-flowing. Could be this, it could be that. It's
okay,
probably
cool.
How I've experienced creativity. And then the heart and soul... I don't know, because the heart and soul's always there for me.
Yeah.
In whatever I do, and it's important. But sometimes that can get in the way of creativity, I think. But there's always heart and soul behind it. I'm sure you've heard this a lot, but sometimes the best music that you hear or the song that you love has come out of a mistake. You know, I'm sure you've heard that many times, but it's very true. And, you know, it's really hard to accept that as well, because... I do have a sort of slight perfectionist side of me that you do kind of have to leave out the door, really, because sometimes it's about chaos, really. You know, it is chaos, and embracing it
yeah,
exactly,
yeah.
And making sense of that and going with it, you know.
Yeah.
And I was always. Strange, because I was always the way I was taught. I mean, it sounds weird to say things like taught and all that when we're talking about creativity, but I was always taught to finish an idea. Even from a young age, when I was exploring writing songs, 11 or 12, I knew that I would have to finish a song and close that chapter to go on to the next one.
What an incredible lesson.
Yeah, at times I found it very frustrating, because you hear stories of, oh yeah, just, you know, started that, left that for a bit. The idea of starting something and leaving something, for me, I just can't. It's really bizarre. I'll have sleepless nights about not
that
getting to a point.
Fascinating, because that is the complete opposite of the majority.
I know.
That is a gift and a half.
Yeah, it's a
curse. You probably feel like it's sort of blessing and
it's
a curse,
definite,
right? It's sort of got
I think
a combination.
It's a blessing and a curse.
Yeah.
I think it's because when I worked with Rostam, you know, it was very much let's park that to one side and then open up another. And I was like, you know, oh.
It's a massive quality, because people could say, I'm really time poor. If it's not working, I just need to move on. But actually, that push through can bring out something super special.
Yeah.
Why is it important to you to finish a project?
Because I can't move on otherwise. I'm still stuck in that other portal.
Yeah.
It stunts me for the next thing. I think it's also like limitations, right? Like the jazzers going in and recording a record in 3 hours. That's what they say that A Kind of Blue took. Mm. Obviously, that was like 6 months of prep. But I think knowing that there is a limit helps me creatively improve or move around within that limitation.
Yeah.
And I know that I just have to finish it.
It's a discipline. Right, Georgia, this is your last question that you picked, which is, how do you measure success?
I think measures... Gosh. Pass.
Fucker, on the last one. No. It's up to you.
Yeah, pass. There's no such thing as success. We need to get that notion out of our heads. That's my answer.
Okay, yeah. Then.
Success
is
bullshit.
Absolute bullshit. I'm with you. How do you spell success?
No idea. No.
Okay, there you go. That's it. In the bin. The
I look at my
mum
and she had two kids. That's success
yep.
for her. You know, some people it's 8 Grammys, 2 Brit Awards, yep. whatever. I
yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on in the background, which can often mean the complete opposite.
Yeah, I think so. Success to me sometimes is getting up and, you know, getting out of my bed and facing the world. Sometimes that's just success, really. And I can go to bed and rest easy and who knows what the next day will bring. That's success to me.
Amazing. Well, there you go then.
Yeah. Mic drop.
Yeah. Thank you so much. It means a lot. You've invited us into your natural habitat and been extremely generous in sharing your story and your influences, knowledge and expertise. And that goes a long, long, long way.
Thank you for starting these conversations. I think that's also really important. So thank you.
Before we go our separate ways, is there anything that you want to shout about? Basically, any recommendations, any upcoming projects?
Well, I've got a new single out.
Okay.
It's called Too Much, Too Little. Yep. And it's out there in the world. And hopefully in the coming months, there'll be an album. But right now, I'm returning back to a bit more of a dance floor-y sort of mentality of dropping 12s. So that's really exciting. So yeah, it's called Too Much, Too Little.
Awesome. Was it recorded here?
It was, yeah.
It was wicked. Well, look, thank you so much. Really appreciate your time and have a lovely rest of the day.
Thanks,
thank
Laura.
Thank you, thank you. Cool, cool.
Probably get Lawrence, my A&R, on the phone though, being like, what's this folk project?
Yes. Folk, what? If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you don't miss a single drop of the Creative Blood Experience by subscribing and following the show wherever you listen to your podcasts. And share it with a fellow creative. Let's get these conversations out there and into the ears of those who need to hear them. This show was created in partnership with the brilliant humans here at Creative Blood and Scenery Studios. Thanks for listening.